At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
No, I have to say thank you to you guys for what you wrote, produced, all the ideas, and that's really something I'm really grateful for. And to Pete and for inviting me on the show. And so, and anytime you want to do it again, I'm here.
Okay, hey everybody, Beverly Hills 90210 Show fans. This is Pete along with Larry Mullen. We learned about the passing of our friend here at the podcast, David Gale. And we were very, very saddened by this. Larry and I tried to find David for a long time because we wanted him to talk about this incredible storyline from season 4. And we both kept digging through it. We found that he was a voiceover actor in Paris. And I contacted some of his friends. And finally, a friend connected us, and he was in Paris. And when I contacted David, the first thing he said to me via WhatsApp was, "I'm so glad you found me." And we had him on the podcast, and I thought he was really, really lovely and a kind, a good human. Larry, what did you think?
Well, look, I mean, when we first set out for this, I had a lot to do with that storyline, so I always really loved his performance. We started searching for him. We looked all, I think finally we got some kind of a clue on LinkedIn that he might be in Paris. And then we kind of worked it from there. And then we had him on. He had a young kid who's always in the background of all these episodes, just having a ball. And he just was able to really unload. And you forget what an important spelling actor he was. He had done so many spelling shows. And also, he had done soap operas as well, General Hospital, I think, and Port Charles.
Port Charles, for sure. Yeah. He was so ecstatic to come on the podcast and share his stories of working in the spelling environment and on 90210.
You know, we had Zach Throne also on that episode, and they had worked together. I think it was maybe in The Heights or the Round Table. The other spelling shows. And they had great stories too, but he was a pro's pro. He just was a trooper. You know, he had a good attitude. He came in because he really had to adjust. I think the advice he talks about in the show is that he got an acting coach. It was a big part. It was actually bigger than, he had appeared early in the series as a bellhop, just kind of a day player thing. But this was a substantial part. And, for all we know, it could have become a regular. I mean, it wasn't impossible. Or even to bring it back, Brendan had stayed beyond the fourth year. So, I mean, and then, we cast him. He just was naturally good. He just flowed with stories and energy, and he was so young. I mean, so it's just a terrible shock. We wish his best to his family, his young son, and his spirit. Hopefully his spirit will soar and keep soaring because he was a good soul. He was a good pro and a good father and a good husband, I suspect.
The thing is, too, is, Shannon is such a great actor. She is a beautiful actress. She brings so much to 90210. We've talked about that a lot on the podcast. And David also is a very gifted actor and performer. When you put those two people together, there was something really beautiful. They leaned into each other. The work was really nice and honest and authentic.
Well, I think he gravitated to playing an entitled character, which was kind of cool. Because I don't think he particularly grew up in an entitled environment. He was born in and grew up in Tampa, the Tampa region of Florida. But he just was able to play that in an effortless way. And we surrounded him with two parents, which I wish I could remember their names. They were wonderful. And that stuff, it rang true because what was so good
Peter
about
Mark,
that,
Peter Mark
that storyline? What's that?
Peter Mark Richmond, I think, is one of
them. Peter Mark Richmond, and also the woman playing the wife. They're both deceased now. But what was so great was that this was a relationship that, of course, Jim Walsh loved because it was upwardly mobile for Brenda. It wasn't like a stable family, unlike the McKay family. Right. But, I mean, and David could just do all that. And also, in the end, he has to play a guy who gets stood up at the altar. And he has to play it with good humor and not a vicious bone in his body. And and a kind of a c'est la vie kind of attitude, which was endearing and maybe really was the key to his own soul.
Yes, very vulnerable, very honest actor. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to replay David's stories from the episode that we did. We're going to pull out some of the stuff that we would normally talk about in some of the clips and just give you David's great stories. I have to say, Chuck would send his regards. He's on a trip, and I know he loved David. And I never saw Chuck laugh as much in an episode of our podcast as much as he did in hearing David Gale share some of his stories here on our podcast. So I know he was beloved by the Rosens as well. So wanted to just add that. Okay. I'm gonna start playing all these great stories that he shared with us. Boom!
And how lucky we are.
Someone. David Gale. He is the someone. David Gale, a.k.a. Stuart. Man, it is so good to see you. Before we get into all this, I want to bring on Chelsea. She's a super fan of David Gale and of Stuart. So we always love to give our fans an opportunity to say hello and all of that. Chelsea, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you guys?
Very good.
Very good. It's always great. I'm so happy to see you came out of hiding.
Yes, I think that the charm of Stuart Carson brought me out.
Very good. What a good. Very good.
It really was a lot of charm. Yes,
it was.
Chelsea, do you have any questions for David about Stuart? Yeah.
I just want to say, like, thank you for everything you brought to the character. I mean, I say this storyline with Brendan and Stuart is my favorite of season four. It's just like there's these four episodes leading up to this, and these are the episodes I can put on if I'm like stressed or sick or whatever. And it's fun, it's romantic, it's just, I love it. And the thing is, like with the Vegas episode, she's 18, he's 24, they've known each other 3 weeks, and they're getting married. That's crazy. Yeah. But yeah. Every time I watch, I get swept up in the romance. I'm like, marry him. Just, sucks me in. It is so good. And like, even, and because he's charming and he's romantic, but he is sincere as well with some of the things he says at the end of their first date. He's like, do you have any plans for the rest of the week? Or how about for the rest of your life? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm buying into it. And the thing, and like John Sears at the same time is talking to Kelly with similar type of stuff, but he's smarmy and he's slimy. But right. Stuart has this sweetness about him. And then you add in like the insecurities with his father and everything, which just makes him more real, more relatable, and more likable. And yeah. I just love it. But I just have to mention, there's this one thing that I think sums up the whole character for what I liked about it. Where Brenda and Brandon are in the car, and Brandon's like, so are you saying this guy's all together? And Brandon's like, let me put it this way. There's been no one in my life, including Dylan McKay, who's ever known how to, and Brandon's like, how to what? She's like, how to woo. And Brandon's like, you think Stuart gives good woo? She's like, the best. He wooed and he charmed, but there was a sincerity with it that,
right.
I just love it.
Well, thank you for that. And it was a great character. And I have a story behind that. Chuck, you were talking about how it came about, but the arc of the story. But you know, I was working on the script with an acting coach, Howard Fine. And I remember
Howard Fine is a major acting coach, by the way, everybody. Yeah.
There was a line in there, and there were a lot of them, but I was trying to, you know, it's such a great character, because normally when I have a role and you're playing a straight character, he's not bad, he's not super good, he's just kind of even keel, it can be difficult for me. And this is how this came about, how the character clarified. I asked Howard Fine, there was a line that said something like kisses with kisses with you are like eating potato chips, you can't have just one. And I said to Howard, how can I say that? Do I throw it away? He goes, no, you don't throw it away. That's this guy. He believes every word and he means it. And you have to, you go with that part of the character. And that really, along with everything else and being rich and having the problems, like you said, Chelsea, with the father, with his father and everything, that in that moment, I just went, it just made the whole character run for me. And that's how I invested so deeply in every bit of it. I found the way, and it was, then I found all the complexities, all the difficulties. This guy, you know, he had a lot of things on his shoulder, that a lot of emotions that he was going through, you know, a lot of things playing on him. But yeah, it was really kind of a aha moment, you know.
So this is Zach Sloan.
Hey, Zach.
What's up, dude?
It's a spelling company reunion we're having. Oh, right.
I was watching you last night. They sent me the Vegas episode. Fuck. And I was watching, and I was watching with my girlfriend, and I was like, I know this actor from somewhere. Like, I know him. And she's like, where? And then I looked you up, and you were on the round table, and you and I was on the Heights.
That's right.
And we used to hang out and go out to dinner.
Okay. And the old
we hung out like a lot in Vancouver.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the old.
I was like, I know him.
In Kitsilano.
In Kitsilano, exactly.
Yeah,
that's right. Cool. Awesome.
How have you been?
I've been great, man.
Good.
I've been
good.
Awesome. I've been in Vegas now 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
we had good times back then. That was
we had great times.
How did you get into this world of Aaron Spelling, 90210, all of this?
Okay, so I was new into LA maybe two years. I'd done maybe five guest stars, you know, Doogie Howser and a couple others. And I had this audition for this show, 90210. And I read for the casting director, went in to meet the producers in the Spelling Entertainment building in the theater room, whatever, in the theater. And I was reading for a character that was the first time I met Aaron and everyone, and it was for a recurring role or possibly more. And I started to read, and I could tell, I just wasn't doing that well. And so afterwards, my agent called and said, I think it might have been Harry Gold. And he said,
Harry. Yeah, Harry's our friend. Yes.
Yeah. And he said, let me tell you what happened. I go, okay. He goes, you didn't get it. Okay. But, but they liked you a lot. And I'm like, okay. So they're going to give you a smaller role. They said you were green and that they'd like you to go to acting classes. And I said, specific acting classes. That's how I got hooked up with Howard Fine. Or I think Harry did it. But anyway, the point is that I went in for one role. I got this bellhop. And so it was just a small arc, but it was a couple scenes. And but that started the relationship with Aaron. That was, I did four shows with him, three series regulars. And when I came back, it was such a shock. I was asking, how can I possibly come back? I mean, they have close-ups on me and everything. I mean, how can I possibly come back? But it worked. I mean, it was a totally
You're too good to waste.
You know that song wasn't me? It's kind of like that.
I think the part of Stewart, as I remember, Aaron just told us they wanted us to look at this guy, I think. I don't think there was really an open casting on the part.
It was not an open casting.
Yeah, I mean, which was really cool. And then to see you on the screen, and there was real good chemistry right away between you. And I think the first director you had was Jim Meckhouse, actually, too.
Yeah.
So you get delivered as the blind date of the sun. What was it like working with Shannon?
Oh, Shannon was great. I mean, in the beginning, when I came on the show, they were already rolling. They were already in their own groove and everything. And so it was, but I was quiet. I was patient. Shannon, I don't know. She was very nice, but we didn't talk a whole lot. So we kind of just jumped into these scenes that were pretty, pretty heavy. And I didn't really have much conversation with her in the beginning. But after a couple of, you know, I think maybe an episode or two, we got along great, and we had a really good relationship. We talked about the scenes, we worked on them, and it was fun. We had a really good time together. I enjoyed working with her and talking with her, actually.
So you meet Aaron, you start doing some stuff from. How did you get back onto 90210?
I just got the call for. I don't remember exactly. I just got the call from my agent. I think at that time it was Innovative, and they called and said, you know, yeah, they want you back at 90210. And I said, well, what for? And they said, there's a role. I said, as the bellhop? They go, no, a different role altogether. We'll send you the script. And I was kind of shocked. And yeah, and somewhere in there also, you know, you wrote something that really helped me in my career, I think. You wrote something for the LA Times and the Calendar in like...
Well, I didn't write it. I actually just took the phone call and talked to
you. Yeah.
Well, you remember it. It was really nice. It was unbelievable. You were very nice to me, and I wanted to thank you for that. But yeah, that was wonderful. I remember
just
said
it there. You know, it was just, you know, they paid me. I'd say anything. You know,
I paid you.
I was going to say, what is
Aaron, you were saying you shared that article with me earlier. Do you want to tell everybody what the article, what Chuck actually said in the article?
Yeah, I'll say real quick while she's doing that. You know, what the funny moment was when they called me back. After we had this, you know, marriage, and it was kind of, it just was open ended. It was left open. When I got the phone call that they wanted me back, and they actually, someone called me. I don't think it was Aaron, but someone talked to me about it, said, look, I think it might have been Aaron. Actually, we talked. He said, look, we've got to get the audience to let go of you. We've got to bring you back, and you're going to go on this camping trip. She locks the keys in the car, and the you just
this
have
is to- so fucking fascinating to me. I can't tell you, David. He would pick up the phone. This is a man. I said, Aaron, you know, why don't you put your name on as an executive producer? You're on this now. The union. We don't have a union, and it's not a non-union show anymore. If you would, so he's telling you what we, you know, doing. By the way, I was going to tell you that part of the keys, losing the keys in this, was my life. And Larry knows with this because he knows I leave things. It was my life,
and I
had my meltdown in front of Karen, and we had been dating like 2 months, 6 weeks.
Oh yeah, exactly. I think this was an earthquake show too. I think this was
we were in a fantasy land, and then all of a sudden I freak out because I lose. Geez, this scene really matters. And for him to say what we're doing, he'd read the script, and then all of a sudden, I guess we were all aware, but you know, anyway, that's an aside.
I think he was, it sounded like he wanted to convey to me, like, look, don't be likable. Don't be charming. Don't be anything. You really, you know, I felt like it was something like that. That he was trying to make sure that I
that's true. Aaron would get nervous, and he would want to make the key word you put there with the clause, make sure. He had to make sure that you understood what our intentions were, because he wouldn't be in the room for the tone meeting. And and we've talked about tone meeting. Every TV show has a tone meeting, and a decent showrunner will be at that tone meeting. Basically, it's with between the director in front of the producer. And really, the bigger shows have to have this, because the writer, and the writers were always invited, you know, to get up all the nuance of the script. Everything that possibly we could want, we're telling the director. Because it's unfair for, as Zach and you both know, David, it's unfair for the... when a producer comes on the set, oftentimes it'll undermine the relationship between the actor and the director. Yeah. And that was pointed out to me, and I never really went back to the set very much, because it was a way to circumvent authority sometimes. But
you know, looking back at that, there's something interesting, because you were so damn likable, we had to make sure that you were unlikable so we could release her from you, you know?
David. It was absolutely, it was so much fun. Again, the character gave so much to, you know, there was so much to play there, you know, from the locking the keys into the car and then blaming it on her to my dad. And then her
mine was her never that bad, you know. No, I had to draw a line. I just used mine as inspiration.
Sure, right.
You know, it was David's daughter.
Yeah. My memory of this show is this show happened when the Northridge quake happened. We were that was the other thing. We were luckily filming away from this studio when the quake happened.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
well, Aaron, what was the thing that did you pull that up?
It's from the LA Times, October 12th, 1993. He's very talented, very intelligent, and he's a good looking guy, said executive producer Charles Rosen. You put that combination together and it works really well for the intimacy of television. And then he adds, David didn't get cast because he's a handsome guy. He got cast because he's a terrific actor.
Really awesome stuff. Yeah.
All true.
Now, David, before we were talking earlier, you told me a Luke Perry story from when you were the bellhop, right? That I think the fans would really enjoy you sharing.
No, I was telling Peter, you know, the first time I went on set for 90210, I was walking into a big room with another. It was a set just next to the where they were shooting, and everyone was in their director chairs, and it was like an island of director chairs. And I was walking towards it, and I was like, "Oh boy," you know. I was like, I forget the analogy I said to you, Peter, but it was a little ominous. I was a little like, "Okay, what do I do?" You know. And this guy stands up like on his chair and goes, "Are you David Gale?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm David Gale." He goes, "Welcome to the show, man." And he goes, "And you know, this is," and he started introducing me to everyone. And that was Luke. And we stayed friends for, you know,
the show's ambassador for the inner workings of the show.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Yeah.
It was great. And immediately I was like, okay. Yeah, it really helped a lot. I just felt like, wow. It was like, I admired him in that moment, you know, immediately. I just went, now that's a guy who handles himself right, you know, who welcomed me. And I did that later on in shows that I had when guest stars would come on. I remembered what he did, and I found a way to invite those people on, you know, and introduce myself or whatever. Yeah.
Go for the Duke Vincent story that you have.
I mean, Aaron was very, very kind and very, you know, he would say it like it is to me. You know, he would pull me outside the room. He told my dad one time, he said, "Your son's going to love Atlanta, Georgia." And so I was nervous. I came out of the producer audition and my dad, you know, he's kind of a country guy. And he goes, "You got it, son." And I said, "Dad, you don't know. You have no idea." He goes, "No, you got it." And I was like, "Dad," he goes, "You don't know what he said to me." I go, What did he say to you?" And he says, "Your son's going to love Atlanta, Georgia, where we shot Savannah." So anyway, that's that. E. Duke Vincent one time came on that set of Savannah. And at the time, I didn't realize that, you know, when you're shooting the shows, after the scenes, it's all that camera's on for a few seconds.
No, afterwards.
And you know this.
Learned by the actor.
We were in Buckhead at a steakhouse. Duke had come to visit the show because Aaron didn't fly. Obviously, you know that. And we were at this restaurant, and I went to the restroom, and I was washing my hands or something, and I turned around. The door, bam, comes in. And he goes, "Hey!" I turned to him, and he literally does his elbow up to me, runs me to the wall, and I'm on my feet. I'm off my feet, on my tippy toes. And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "You're just like me." And I said, "What?" I was like shocked. He goes, "You're a cocky son of a bitch." And I said, he goes, "But I like you." And then he let me down. I was like, I didn't know if that was a warning or what.
There's a lot of alcohol involved, I think.
That's how I'm thinking. You're just like, what were you? I was going to ask you, how much did you have to drink, David, if you want to be just like Duke?
I don't know. But here's another story. On the same show, I was we were in the second season. We had shot, I think, 12, and then we went, we were shooting. I forget how it went. But anyway, yeah, we shot 12, and we came back for one. We shot, it was a mid-season replacement, and then we came back for another season. Anyway, Robin Lively and I were dating, and we had gone to New York, and it was winter, and it was that time of that big storm up there, the huge storm in Manhattan to shut everything down. I think it was, I don't know when, 96, 97 or something. And we were in a hotel and we were trying to get flights out because we had to shoot, like, I think it was Saturday and we had to shoot on Monday. So we were trying to get flights out on Sunday and we hadn't been able to get any flights out. So I made a call to my agent and they made a call to the set, to Spelling and said, look, David, Robin aren't going to be able to make the show on here whenever we had to shoot because they can't fly out. Man, that was crazy. And there were no commercial flights. So we got a call from Duke. He's like, oh, no, we got a call from my agent and said, look, Spelling called us, Aaron Timmy, and they said, Duke is working on getting you out of there. He knows someone. He says he could even fly or this, that, and the other, and they're gonna try it. So we get this call that we need to go to Jersey to some airport, and that's possibly where we're gonna go, and that we're going to,
fly the storm
when no one else in their right mind would fly. We're supposed to be on this plane, and I swear to you. And I thought about it. I said, okay, I'm a servant, I'm like, sure, okay. And I remember hanging up, and I told Robin, and I thought about it for a second. I called my, I go, no, man, no, we're not flying out in this blizzard, snow. I was terrified. he was adamant. You're gonna make it. We're gonna get you here. No problem. I used to fly planes in the war or something. I don't know what he did. But
it was Blue Angel.
Yeah,
but Larry, so, you have your own.
Yeah, because I did fly in the storm with him. It was terrifying, but we survived. Oh, but yes, oh yeah, I'm going coming out of Cabo, but going back to LA. Yeah, smart move, man. That was good.
He was a. I kind of, you know what? It was Duke, so I kind of, I was almost like, I know he's a man of action. I was like, this might be. Just either I die or it's very cool.
I think you had one other Aaron story about running into him at a casino, right? That you were
I was in Vegas. I was with my ex-girlfriend at the time. We were there at the Hard Rock Hotel. And we're at the bar, not in the casino part, but around in the restaurant area at the bar having a drink. And someone came up behind me, and it was someone from Spelling, I can't remember who it was, and she said, hey. I said, oh, hey, how are you? And we were talking, and I said, oh, man, I love Aaron. He's great. He goes, you should say hi. I go, I will. I when I get back to LA. Said, no, he's right over there. I turn around. There's a table of, like, I don't know, 20 producers, people from Spelling Entertainment. I imagine maybe you guys were there. Might have been somebody, one or two of you were there. And I turned around, it was everyone that I knew from Spelling Entertainment. There's a lot of people. He gets up from the other side of the table, walks around, and, he's kind of a small guy, and he's shorter than me, and he leaned up, he pulled my head down, and he kissed me four times, one of each, here. And it was, he was always.
Well, that's the difference between Aaron and Duke. He'll kiss you here, and Duke will just push you against the wall. They had different styles. That's what made them work so well.
Like a mom and dad.
Yeah. It's like, but he said something to you in that conversation, right? He was gonna.
It might have been there actually. He had said to me, he goes, "Look, oh, it was when one of the shows got canceled. I think it was." Either a round table or, when I left Robin's Hoods, when Robin's Hoods, he did that.
You did Robin's Hoods?
Yeah, I was. Danny was- Burke. So anyway, he said to me, he goes, you know, the show Robin's Hood, I think it was Robin's Hood, it was canceled. And he said, listen, you know, I love you. You're great. Don't worry. We're going to find something else for you. I'm going to put you in everything I can. You're going to be, I'm going to make you a star. And I can't tell you, to hear that as an actor in Hollywood, you know, coming, it's funny because it's bigger now than it was then. It was so big that I couldn't even digest it. I didn't realize, you know, but it felt good. I mean, it was amazing, but he was really sweet to me. You know? I got to tell you that moment was another moment that was difficult. Again, it was with Howard Fine and we were working on it. And when I get up on the stage and announce the engagement, and he says, you're not capturing the size of the event. Mm-hmm. And he goes, let me break it down for you. You're interrupting this other thing to say that you're getting married and you don't even know the time span of your relationship. And he just, he encapsulated everything and said, the size of the event is enormous, David. You have to really go for this. And that was a brilliant piece of writing. I mean, for me to, it was something to sink my teeth into.
What do you remember about shooting some of that with Shannon?
I remember that. No, at that point we were really good together on set and in between scenes and stuff. And, we didn't talk much at all about the scene or the characters. We just let it happen. And it was really good that way because it was fresh. It wasn't contrived. We weren't playing ideas. We were playing more reacting off one another. And it was good because, especially at that time, I had a tendency to really want to lock it down in my head, you know. And it forced mm-hmm. me to just like go with it, you know. Right, let's just do this. And as I'm watching it, you know, even that analytical part of my brain is like, whoa, it's funny, but I'm thinking I could have said the second line differently, you know, and with more emphasis. And that's not right. It's good the way it is. It is
really
same delivery, and it's just the same question, girl. Do you want to marry me?
Yeah. You know what's amazing too is that, you know, because as we started spinning the storyline, you think that you're going to become we have to make you the bad guy, and all guys are going to hate you, all the friends, you know, but everyone can't hate you because you win them over. You're so genuine in a way, and mm-hmm. and even the Dylan thing, which we put in a pretty good plot there, where Dylan knew you from the club days, where you obviously were a rich kid who kind of went, you know. You know, overboard a little bit, but the fact you cleaned up just like he did, so he really couldn't really fault you for that. I mean, everyone kind of works in and they like you.
Well, also the fun part of this writing this particular episode was the ploy. You know, the subtle, you know, psychological suggestions that, you know, well, of course you're going to be doing this, and you won't be doing creating the culture of doubt in your head, right, that the friends did.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cool, it works pretty well. And we do get to go to a strip club, which
everyone was happy. David, do you remember getting Jason as a director?
Yeah, I do. I didn't know that was happening until, you know, the show, I was on this, I got the script, but yeah, it was interesting. I said to myself, you know, you should, I wanted to direct, and you should give that a shot. And I was actually talking to Spelling about ghosting or shadowing a director before I left the last show with him. So, but anyway, yeah, Jason was great. He was good. I was watching him, you know. I was like, okay, this is a guy I know. He's an actor. He's directing now. Let's see how he handles it. And he seemed confident, and he was.
Well, this was only his second show.
Mm-hmm. That he directed, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really love the casting of Stewart's parents, and I love seeing Peter Mark Richmond, who I remember is Christie's dad, Reverend Snow on Three's Company. What was he like to work with?
I'm sorry.
You had a,
what was he like to work with? This, which he asked.
Oh, he was. I really felt like he was my dad when I was in those things. He was so good and so natural and so he had such an air about him. I mean, he was just like a just a really, really connected guy, and he played that role, and there was no other way for me to play it. I mean, in terms of, he affected me with everything he did. When he put me down, when he said something, it was so good that it actually, I felt it, you know what I mean? And I was like, I never even, it was easy to be on set with, to be in a scene with him. I didn't even, I just came in with my guy and my character, and it was, I actually felt like he was my dad. I mean, I felt, I bought it. The moment I saw him, I was just in, and it was easy. And that was him doing that. That wasn't me preparing the role. It was his way that he came at that character, and the way he dealt with me. It was so decisive, so clear, so easy that it seemed like it was real, and it had always been that way, you know. And it made it helped with everything that I had worked on. It made it kind of gel, you know.
Yeah, the whole cast. You're in the mix of this now.
What happened? Yeah.
What do you think about the others, Jenny and Tori, and being around them? What was it like for you? Was that an intimidating process? Were they all pretty cool? We hear a whole bunch of different versions of this.
It was intimidating. You know, I was older than them, and I had just come from, I was in Florida. I went to University of South Florida, and I went into business and different things. I was taking acting at night and doing some theater, but I was, I think, when I came on that show, 27. At that time, maybe older or closer to 30, or 28, 29. But anyway, I was older than them, and I was from a different. I wasn't in Hollywood or acting for most of my life. So I had a different. It wasn't intimidating. What intimidated me was the fact that I was in Hollywood and I was on a set in Hollywood. So it was kind of, and the fact that it was them, was it wasn't really them that intimidated me, but the fact that they had the group that I was working with, the whole group. I remember being a little bit, not nervous, but the anticipation of doing these scenes with the entire cast. And I didn't really know them that well. Jenny was always very sweet to me. We talked a lot, but I didn't talk to the other cast members that much. I just didn't have the chance to, really. I got to tell you, that again lent to the character. He was an outsider.
Yeah.
And I was an outsider. And so it all just worked. You know, I just that seemed like, in retrospect, the least contact I had, at least I tried to, off the set, the better. Because yeah. My character on the show was kind of, they had a lot of aspects of what I was going through with being in Hollywood, with being on this show. And, I do remember thinking, I feel a little alone here, but that's cool. I'm alone and this is my character and I'm alone. And I was just constantly rolling it all together and seeing how much deeper I could go with it. So
yeah. I was those feelings before.
It's funny listening to David because I share a lot of the same experiences that you did. I studied with Howard Fine as well. And
oh, didn't you?
Yeah. So I was kind of fresh out of school. I was still studying while I was working, but I confess I was intimidated at first, even though I knew everybody, I was intimidated when I walked on the set of 90210 because now it's real, right. And you see the Peach Pit and here we are. It was a little scary, you know? Right. And then after I worked mostly with Brian, and I had known Brian from the year before from the Heights. And so we were really good friends. So the second we shot our first scene, and we shot it so fast, it all kind of went away, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, it could definitely be intimidating.
I remember being jealous of the show. I remember thinking, I want to do a show about music. I want to be a rock and roll guy.
It's so weird you say that, because I was jealous of your show because you were all playing lawyers and we're going, how do you talk? And I was like, they're so respectable and they're dressing nice. And
oh, that's so funny.
But
yes, doing the research, we found out it was a 5 episode sweep, which is very unusual for the month of November. So we really rocked it with this plot, and we didn't have to wait to the 12th episode to take charge. We were good by like as soon as you really came on the scene.
Did we beat Melrose?
Yeah, and never looked back.
This was number 10 of the season.
Wow, this one was So I think about 6. I think we hit it. Yeah.
Someone asks, "Hey, David. Where do you, if say Stuart and Brenda did get hitched in Vegas, where do you think their characters would be today?" And so, and she said she loves you on Savannah.
Oh, where do I think they would be today? I don't know. Now, somewhere deep in the valley, nice house.
Well, where do you think Stuart is today?
He's probably still living at home.
Well, the person that Stuart is based on, the father went broke and he went in and out of rehab many times. So the joke's on Brenda, I think.
Oh, there you go.
Alicia wants to know if you're anything like Stuart, or is there any moment or scene that stuck out to you in shooting all of this?
I am like Stuart in some ways. I mean, you always bring quite a bit of yourself, I think, to every character. The moment when I say, "What are you doing for the rest of your life?" That moment and those words hit me, were very romantic to me, and very they weren't cheesy at all to David. And I felt in that moment like, wow, you know, this is such a beautiful and big thing to ask someone, to say to someone, you know, to say it sincerely. It was cathartic in a way, in terms of like I could being there for that question, not just the words, but the act of saying, you know, I'm yours. Do you want to be mine? It was a really, it was one of the more poignant moments in that whole arc.
What are you doing now? You're doing some voiceover stuff you were talking about, right?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to act here, but I am involved with some people in the theater in Paris, and I'm doing the voiceovers. Yeah. For France TV, I work with them on documentaries. Like, you know, they'll have something on Van Gogh or Vincent Van Gogh or whatever. And they'll have a French, journalist speaking about it. And I'll dub him in, English. And, and then I do, you know, corporate stuff, and I also do some games.
Nice video game stuff?
Yeah, and I'll do characters for those games.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, that and I'm working on some other stuff. I teach some people how to give presentations and stuff. But the point is that I have my son, you know, 2 Wednesdays a month and 2 weekends a month and half of the holidays, which are frequent here. And he lives 3 hours away, so I have to trek to go there for every weekend and every Wednesday just for the day. So my schedule is pretty rough in terms of logistics, and so I can't really, you know, I want to pursue some stuff in London or whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah, that real life just happens.
Yeah.
All right, this has been great. Listen, I just want to say, David, man. I can't say enough, and I said this to you before, but everybody wanted to talk to you because of what you did all those years ago. This character that you created, Stuart, it's just amazing work, man. And we all love you here. And I always try to speak for all the fans, but I know that they just continued asking about you and having you come on here because they just absolutely adore your work. And you brought something really, really special to 90210 in a time where
it's an important part of the show. I mean, we're really all grateful to it. Looking at it now,
you saved me, man, because that arc, once we were back on top, I had smooth sailing until for the next year and a half.
So. No, I have to say thank you to you guys for what you wrote, produced, all the ideas, and that's really something I'm really grateful for. And to Pete and for inviting me on the show. And and anytime you want to do it again, I'm here.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.